So welcome back, all 22 listeners. Thank you for joining.
Is that like the official number?
No, it's way more than 22.
Good.
I'm trying to be humble.
Yeah.
You know the drill, people. This is Sort of Sophisticated, the podcast where we basically just pick a random topic every week, try to learn a little bit more about it. Nothing fancy, nothing deep, just enough so we can understand it and sound smarter than all our friends. That's kind of it, really.
I mean, it's really because you like to flex. So let's be real.
I'm too old to flex. There's no flexing left.
No, that's not true. I will never forget the day that you guys came over for dinner.
Yeah.
And your whole family was like, oh my gosh, he's so flexing, blah, blah, blah. And I had no clue what that meant.
You were flexing.
That was when I learned the word. But I was not. That was just a normal.
Right. Dinner that you were making for like 12 people.
Yeah, but that's
normal. You had all of the.
Normal day.
You had all of the dinner party.
Just Korean barbecue.
You had all the dinner party essentials.
Wasn't even
you followed the how to throw a dinner party before we even did a podcast episode on how to throw a dinner party.
Fair.
Let's be honest. People, that lovely voice you're listening to is Amanda, because she's on the show every week with me as my formidable and wonderful co-host. So officially, hello, Amanda.
Wow, you must be having a good day today. Hello. That was so kind of you. There's such nice words that came out of your mouth.
I'm sort of having a good day.
Oh, good. Well, let's keep it going.
Yeah. Do you know why I'm having a good day?
Why are you having a good day?
Because I'm really excited about this episode.
Is that why you were singing when you came in?
That's why.
Does it have to do with that?
I've been singing for the last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Here's the deal. Like, some episodes I love and some episodes not so much.
True.
And I just sort of grind through them. This,
you evidently loved.
This I love. Do you want to know what this is?
I do.
I'm dropping it right now. Kay. One of my favorite musicians of all time.
Oh, dear.
The Boss. Do you know who The Boss is?
Nope.
Bruce Springsteen. Nothing?
I mean, I know the name.
You're killing me. Okay, so
I'm
going to
become
new...
so sophisticated today.
Yeah. No. New movie coming out. Okay? Like next week.
Is called... this like the Bohemian Rhapsody one that came out?
Okay, close but not really.
Which also...
Yes. Which
that,
also...
That was Queen?
Wow.
Do you see how I stopped? Because I was like, oh no!
That's so bad. Yes.
Well, yes, I was right.
That was Queen.
Okay, thank you.
This one's called Deliver Me From Nowhere. Okay, this one is not a biopic at all.
Okay.
This one is about a very specific time in Bruce Springsteen's life, which mostly concentrates on when he made a specific album called Nebraska. It was like the acoustic stripped down version of, it was like an amazing album, whatever. But my point being, it's not like a whole story of like Queen. There's not like this big ending. This is like, I don't know, I'm making it up because I haven't seen the movie yet. It hasn't come out yet, but like a 3-5 year period of his life. Got it? A very specific thing. Make sense?
Yeah, so is it kind of like Tick, Tick, Boom?
What do you mean? What is Tick, Tick, Boom?
Well, you said that this is like about a specific
part
of
his life.
Springsteen's life.
Yes.
So this was a specific movie or section part of Jonathan Larson's life, the guy who came up with Rent.
Okay.
See, yeah, we both like music just in different genres and ways.
Okay, then I'm going to have to look up Tick, Tick, Boom.
Yes.
And you're going to watch Deliver Me From Nowhere with me.
Deal.
Yeah, it's going to be excellent.
Okay.
Can I give you the official title,
yes,
though?
Yes,
because I didn't even do it. Okay. Springsteen on screen, delivering the boss to a new generation. And I think that says it all.
That's awesome.
Our job today is to make sure the next gen knows who the boss is and why he's so friggin' amazing.
I mean, clearly I don't. So here we go. It's already working. It's magic. It's magic.
He's touring still. You could still go see a concert.
It could, but now, like, the boss. Kay. New generation. I'm not really that new, but here we are.
Oh, my God.
I'm not that new.
Now who's flexing? Right. Settle down. Just because you might be like 15.8 years younger than me. Anyway.
Okay. So what? I know he's amazing.
Yes,
I know you love him.
Yes.
His music's so wonderful. But what about him makes us more cultured and curious? Besides rock and roll? Is it rock and roll?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Yes, it's rock and roll. Don't like, you have to pretend you know more stuff. This is so bad. Okay. All right. So
I'm
you're
just being real. I feel like
fine,
our listeners
you're our test
appreciate
case today. I'm fine.
My naivete.
I'm fine. Do you remember our episode on storytelling?
Yes.
We just did it, okay? He was basically America's storyteller.
This
is who he was, yes. So all his songs are like little novels about living in America, small towns, working in factories, falling in love, losing friends. But the idea was he always gave everybody hope. He was like the working class man's hope. And he like used music to help people understand what was going on during this time. What?
Now that you say that it's like a storytelling, yes. I think it opens my mind to all the different possibilities.
He used music as a bridge between life and culture. Yes. So, look, I love Bruce Springsteen. I love all music, right? I am not saying he's this unbelievable, you know, he's not like the Rolling Stones or he's the Beatles or anything like that at all. I mean, a lot of people would say he's basic. Oh. I just grew up with him, so I absolutely love him. But he also spoke to a bunch of people. And I think that still resonates today because there's just new artists that are trying to do that with our generation. Today, we're just going to try to explain why Bruce Springsteen did that and why it was so important. So maybe,
right, but he did it.
You know what it
in
is?
In the 80s.
Right, 70s and 80s.
Oh, 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You know why this is so cool? Because kids could learn about their parents. Like, this is multi-generational. Because let's say my kids are listening to this podcast right now, right?
Yep.
And they're like, oh my God, my dad's a douche, right? Whatever it is, da 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 da. But if they can understand why I appreciated Bruce Springsteen, they can have an appreciation not only for his music, but then like sort of connect with dad a little bit more.
Yeah.
And vice versa. I mean, we could do this for other new bands and so on and so forth. Okay. So anyway, that's how it's going to make us cultured and curious. Move on, please. I'm losing it.
Okay.
Already.
I guess I'm on board.
All right. Good.
Well,
you have to be, because I don't have anything else to talk about today.
Yeah, well, here we are.
All right. What we got?
And I don't know if you already have recognized or realized this.
Yes. What?
I'm not a big rock and roll person.
Well, that's obvious.
So...
I'm learning more about you. I knew that you weren't, but I learn a little bit more about you every time we get on this podcast, which is nice.
I do appreciate that.
And you learn that I'm sort of more like, you know, edgy and kind of an asshole. So there's that too.
No.
We compliment each other so well.
There we go.
You know, you're sugar and spice and everything nice, and I'm, what is it? Snakes and snails and puppy dog tails? This is actually really what's happening.
I love it.
This is terrible.
Oh my God.
Can we do word of the day, please?
We can.
I just want to move the hell on.
What is it? No, you distracted me. I don't know much about rock and roll, but what I can appreciate about it is the fact that it does bring generations together. Just
it
going
does.
Off of what you were saying
yes.
about being able to relate to one another.
Yes.
And so I'm actually really excited because if anyone brought him up, I would not be able to relate.
Correct.
I would just look like a bumbling fool.
And now you're going to be able to.
Except for Born in the USA, the only song that I...
Let's cut the shit.
Out of all the list.
Think about this for a second, right? I don't know what it was. 5 years ago, 7 years ago? I don't know. I took all my kids to a Jimmy Buffett concert. So he was probably 7 years old. Jimmy Buffett since passed away recently, right? Like 2 years ago.
Yes. Margaritaville.
Yes. I took all my kids.
I saw the play.
Yeah.
Only reason why I know.
Of course.
Continue.
I will tell you, when I die, that will be one of my kids' probably top five favorite memories. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
By default. Yeah. I'm not even saying like anything magical happened.
But it's connecting at a different
level. That's my point. They felt connected to dad. So look, whatever. Like Bruce Springsteen or hate him, go to a concert. He's still touring. He's 76 years old. Figure it out, people.
Right.
Okay.
I would agree.
Now can we do word of the day?
Yes, please go.
All right, here we go. Vociferous.
Vociferous?
Vociferous.
I mean, it sounds like a Harry Potter.
We already know what vociferous is, don't we? No.
Ferocious?
No, not, no.
Vocal?
Vivacious? No.
No, not vocal.
Voluptuous? Remember
no,
when you tried that? Right, okay. Vociferous. Vociferous comes from the Latin vox.
So I said vocal.
Vocal, yes, meaning voice.
Okay,
vox,
okay.
Yes. And ferry, meaning to carry. So it describes people who express their feelings or opinions loudly or insistently.
Ooh.
So like Donald Trump. Would be considered vociferous.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, at first I thought you, but sure. Oh,
okay.
Donald
wow.
Trump.
I don't want any comparison there.
Kidding.
But okay. Maybe yes, but differently.
Okay. Definitely differently.
I hope.
You're not okay. That big of a...
Vociferous.
Anyways. Can it be a vociferous? It can't be a noun.
You are vociferous.
So yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's an adjective.
Yes.
It's an adjective.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But I was going to use it as a noun.
Yeah. Well,
but it's fine.
We use everything as a noun when we're not supposed to anyway. It doesn't matter. So yes, do whatever you want.
Okay. Well, hit it. Let's go. What's the history of good old Bruce Springsteen?
All right. Good old Bruce Springsteen. He was born in a dead man's town.
Clearly, hopefully in the USA.
That is so fun. Right. He was born in the USA.
Okay,
that's it.
Good.
Okay.
I was going to say, then your storytelling nonsense did not like... would not have panned out as well.
Zero. Right. Okay. September 23rd, 1949. He was born. Little Bruce Frederick Joseph Springsteen.
That's quite the name.
Wow. There's a lot. Yes, that was going on. He pops right out of his mom, Adele Ann, in Freehold, New Jersey. And I got no good story here, like no weird Greek god shit going on or anything like that.
Okay, good.
This was regular, normal birth canal stuff.
Like it.
Very normal. Just a Catholic hospital, New Jersey, baby Bruce. Here we are. So his mom's basically recovering in the hospital. And his dad, Douglas, was working like a million jobs at the time just to keep food on the table. Right.
Okay.
We were talking sort of about this whole how he related to this blue collar community. He was a bus driver. His dad was a bus driver, a factory worker, a security guard, even a prison guard. Always grinding, always frustrated. He was like edgy. He was a little pissed off. But he had to do what he had to do to make ends meet for like their family. So in interviews, I was reading about all this crap when I was figuring out who mom and dad are to like figure out how Bruce sort of became who he was. So Bruce always said his dad was kind of dark and didn't talk to him a lot growing up, like at all. His dad battled depression a lot.
Oh.
Spoiler alert, we're going to get there with Bruce. Then on the other hand, you got his mom, Adele, who's a total opposite. So she was always smiling, always upbeat, worked as a legal secretary somewhere in New Jersey, always supporting Bruce in everything he wanted to do. So polar opposites, but grew up kind of poor. Like, I don't want to say poor.
Modestly?
But like, better. modestly, grew up modestly, working hard to make a buck. Small house in Freehold, went to his local Catholic school growing up, and wore hand-me-down clothing and all sorts of shit like that, like this whole life. His nickname in school was Loner.
Oh.
Because he was so quiet and so introverted. Yes, think about that. That's crazy. The guy who ended up like filling stadiums.
He was introverted.
He was introverted, yes.
Or is, I guess. I mean,
yeah, still is. Yeah, I mean, I didn't like check all that out, but we should. Let's interview him. Let's get him on this podcast. Bruce, if you're listening, we would like you on this tiny little podcast with 22 listeners, please.
Modest, modest podcast.
Yes. I don't even know if it's a podcast. Maybe it's sort of a podcast. Anyway, so went from loner, introvert to
rock star.
I'm going to be like a rock star, right?
I think it's interesting how like life trajectory can be something so crazy. I don't know. Like he's a little introverted boy to being selling out stadiums, rock star.
Maybe he had an aha moment. I don't know.
Right.
I guess.
Okay. So before he got hot, I think we're rolling into his younger years.
We could do his younger years. Yeah. Okay. So here's how he sort of got the music bug. I think we'll do music bug.
Okay.
So 1956. Actually, he's only like 7 years old, right? Born in 1949. Now we're in 1956. Yeah. Okay. Guess how it happened. Guess what like inspired him for all this.
The candy shop?
No, come on. We did an episode on this other dude earlier. Viva
Elvis?
Elvis. Ed Sullivan Show. Elvis fucking Presley. 1956. He's watching him on television.
Huh.
Yes. And went bonkers and just said, like, I got to do that shit. Absolutely.
Oh, interesting.
He says, Mom, I want a guitar. Mom, being supportive,
goes
out and buys him a freaking guitar.
Okay.
They didn't even have money. She had to take a loan out to buy him a guitar. So that shows how supportive mom was, which makes no sense because I don't know what you do with your kids, but with me, like.
You're like, no, we can't afford it.
I did that all the time. They'd be like, oh, I want to do this thing. Especially like, and you know, Paul. Paul's crazy about music now.
Yes,
so
yes,
now I don't
yes.
care. But like at the beginning, when Paul's like, Dad, I want a guitar. I'm like, yeah. How about lessons first, bud? Yeah. What? Yeah, lessons. Yeah, no. We can rent something. We can like, you can go to lessons for like a year.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's like nope, I'm going to take a loan out.
Yeah. So
good on her.
But who is the joke on here? Because if you think about this.
Maybe Paul could have been Bruce Springsteen.
Maybe if I would have bought him a guitar earlier, he'd have been famous.
Hmm.
I think I screwed up. Job well done, Adele.
Yep.
Yes. All right. Anyway. Ditto. All right. So it takes about 10 years, and he is just literally grinding away at the guitar. By the late 1960s, he's the front man for a bunch of different bands now, playing in New Jersey bars, community centers, bowling alleys, anything, everywhere he could find gigs.
He's like 18-ish.
I don't know. What is he? Yeah.
Young adult.
Yeah, born in 49, late 60s, yes. We'll call him 19. Yeah, okay, got it. And this wasn't bullshit little stuff when you go to, like, a restaurant and they're playing that soft music. I mean, this was, like, loud, obnoxious, beer-smelling marathons. This was hours of grinding, 3 or 4 hours on stage at a time. Like, he was playing these places. In these bars and clubs. Yeah. Some of the bands he was in, like the Castiles or, like, Steel Mill. I mean, they didn't super get famous or anything like that. But, you know, they had names. I would argue that's where Springsteen got all his stamina to rock the house for all these last, I don't know, 50 years.
It was like his conditioning.
Yes. He was working out. He didn't even know it, dude. He was at the gym. Good for him, right?
So then when did he actually get famous? Because I thought you said that his music started in the 70s.
Yes. Yeah. It was.
Like soonish?
1972, to be exact. So not too long after that.
But was he found while he was doing... like one of these sets?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that's like somebody walked in and was like, ooh.
Yes. Yeah. He got signed by Columbia Records.
Lucky
right.
duck.
1972. So some dude from Columbia Records, here's his stuff in one of these bars, was like, let's go. Actually, fun fact, the guy who signed him from Columbia Records, his name was John Hammond. And he was the same guy that found Bob Dylan.
Oh, wow.
And that was kind of the whole shtick. So when they heard him at the bar, they were trying to brand him as the next Bob Dylan. Because they loved his songwriting. So they signed him in 72. In 1973, he releases his first two albums called Greeting from Asbury Park, New Jersey, and The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle, with the help of his buddies, who at the time were just a bunch of musicians, not really working together, but later became known as the iconic E Street Band, because it's Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. I mean, that's the whole name. That's the whole name. But in 1973, like, those were the guys behind him. He just hadn't.
They weren't a
That wasn't
band.
Their official name yet. But they were totally with him from the start.
Okay. So the E Street Band, we like them.
Yes, we love
them.
Solid
dudes.
Yes, Clarence Clemons, Steven Van Zandt, Max Weinberg, they were all there totally from the beginning. Yes.
Okay. So I digress.
Yes.
For those of us who don't know anything about Bruce.
Well, that's obvious.
Like, Bruce isn't just Bruce. Like you said, he had this whole band behind him.
Yes.
But he wrote all the songs?
He wrote all the songs, but the E Street Band was the rock star.
They're the ones who elevated, obviously, whatever he... was doing.
They made him iconic. He was the front man. But you need your band.
He was a personality. The introverted personality. The
same thing you did with Queen.
Yes.
Right? Like everybody's, Freddie Mercury was shit without Queen. And then, if you remember right, Freddie Mercury tried to go on his own for a while, and it didn't really work.
Yes.
And then he came back after he got AIDS. He came back. He didn't quite tell the band the whole story there, but he came back and was like, I need you guys. I realize that our creative differences is what made, Amanda, it's what makes this podcast work. Like if I just I did it by myself, and you always are helping me like, dude, do this different, try this, try that, whatever it is, right? It's the same thing. Even though I want to literally some days kill you, right?
Yeah. All right, fine. But I feel like for most headliners, it's true. Their bands are never really acknowledged, right? I mean, they, I think, are the ones that propel people to stardom. So why don't we take a moment and acknowledge who his band members are?
We should.
Okay.
So we can propel them.
Well, not even propel them, but like give them their dues,
okay,
right?
Okay, we're going to give it to them right now. Okay. So you had Clarence Clemons on sax. He was like Bruce's onstage soul brother, big black dude with the dreads.
Oh.
Well, I mean, sometimes he had a shaved head, whatever. But most times, I mean, I remember him with dreads, like total legend, right? Unbelievable. Then you had Steven Van Zandt on guitar. Did you ever watch The Sopranos?
Yes.
Were you Sopranos? Okay, so Steven Van Zandt was Silvio in The Sopranos.
Oh.
Yes. So he got famous, like, yeah. No, totally, an acting career.
Okay.
Always wore those really long bandanas on stage, still does. Then Max Weinberg on drums. Fun fact, Max Weinberg was also Conan O'Brien's band leader on his late night talk show for all those years. Yes. And believe it or not, they had to work around Max Weinberg's schedule. So like Bruce could still tour and Max Weinberg could still do it. Yeah, I know. Totally why. Then Gary Talent on bass. Been there since day one. Danny Federici on organ and accordion. And Roy Batan on piano, nicknamed The Professor. All those dudes like there the whole time. That doesn't happen anymore.
Why he reached stardom.
I know. They were awesome.
Like stacked.
Yeah. So and then they added like a few more during the 80s here and there, including Bruce's wife, Patty, to help with backup vocals and guitar.
Oh.
And then check this one out. After Clarence Clemons died in 2011, mm-hmm. Clarence's nephew joined the band to take his place on sax.
That's cool.
Which, yes, is amazing.
I love when your band members become family. You're traveling, you're doing so much together, it makes sense why you become
totally,
family.
They were absolutely family, yes.
Even when you're like multi-generational, right, where it passes it down. Or
100%.
Know, that's awesome.
Yes, let's go. Springsteen and the E Street Band. Where were we? We totally got off track. I have no idea what the hell we were doing. We're talking
about
history.
First two albums.
Oh yeah, we did first two albums. That's right. Okay, so those first two albums, Greetings from Asbury Park and The Wild Innocent, the E Street Shuffle. Okay, they didn't make him famous. That's what we said. Kind of meh. Not a ton of sales or anything. Nothing went viral. They didn't have viral back then.
Yep.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing. Kind of a slow burn. One thing that did come from it, though, was the music critics liked him a lot. So remember, Columbia Records, the whole thing, the lyrics, why they found him. So they were like, shit, dude, this guy has it. But like, they also love the idea that he wasn't polished or corporate or not a sellout either. So a total working class guy with real lyrics. So they were like, screw it. Sales are low. We don't care. It was enough to let him keep making music.
Okay.
Columbia kept him and said, let's keep going. Okay. So back to the studio they go, 1975. They released the album Born to Run. I know you don't know a lot about Born to Run, Born to Run was it.
In the USA?
No.
Oh,
that's not
till
later.
Okay.
Born to Run, that's the title track of the song. It's the album Born to Run, and it's the song.
Okay.
Everybody knows the song, blew the fucking doors wide open.
Oh, I need to listen to it.
Tramp like us, baby, we were born to run. Oh, it's unbelievable. You know the song. Trust me, you know the song. Shit goes nuts. Like, literally became the anthem for America, or like Americana, or Americana? Americana, called, yeah. Overnight, he became a legend. Cover of Time Magazine, Newsweek Magazine, in the same week, at the same time.
Is this one that they dubbed him the boss?
1975. No. No.
Not.
No, so I thought so too. I was like, yay, now we're going to get to the boss. No. Bah, bah, bah. I totally skipped that part. He got the boss way earlier.
See, how?
This is why I love us. I screw up.
You didn't really screw
up.
And
then you fix it and you tell me like,
hey. No, I just have too many questions.
Okay. So Boss was actually in the late 60s before he was famous. So remember when he was playing the Jersey Shore bar bands like Steel Mill and the Castiles? Yeah. So I guess Bruce was the guy they put in charge of collecting all the cash at the end of the night for like all the people in the bar to make sure the band got paid. And all the guys in the band just randomly started calling him the Boss.
Well, I mean, he's dishing out the money like
as
Boss.
As sort of a joke because he was the most responsible to get the money.
How funny.
And then once he signed with Columbia and the whole E Street Band became official by the mid-1970s, everybody was just, dude, you're the boss. And fun fact, I totally found this out while I was looking this up. He didn't like it.
Oh.
He still doesn't like it. No.
Okay.
There's nothing you do about it.
It just stuck. Anymore.
It just stuck. But he
forever the boss.
He is not a fan of his own nickname. I know.
But you said something at the beginning about how the movie isn't about his whole life and it's more just about when he is recording and releasing Nebraska, which I assume is that another album that we have yet to touch about.
Correct.
Obviously, that's going to be after he becomes the boss.
Yes, that's
but
after
does it
the bus.
Reference in the movie The Boss?
Oh, it's going to have to. Of course it will. Okay. I mean, I don't know. We got to go see the movie, right? All I've seen are the clips of crap, like on TikTok or online, right? And so I've got some reviews and some things because it's not out yet.
Fine. So how many albums post Born to Run is this movie?
No, he still goes for a little while longer here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so no, he's more he's like a later life.
I mean, I don't want to say legendary status, but by the time he makes Nebraska, he's like famous. Okay, this is all going to make sense.
Okay, go ahead.
So after Born to Run, he records Darkness on the Edge of Town in 1978. That's the one with Badlands and Prove It All Night, like another great album. You know Badlands. Badlands, you gotta give it all. No, I can tell by the way you're looking at me, you have no freaking idea what I'm talking about. Anyway, that's excellent. And then he released The River in 1980, and this was his first album to reach number one. First album. Oh. Uh-huh. Hungry Heart. Everybody got a hungry heart. Oh, my God. You have to listen to all this stuff. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, so then, so now he's totally famous. He's got Born to Run, he's got Badlands, he's got Prove It All Night, Hungry Heart, everything, right? So everyone thinks now he's going to go even bigger with his, like, global, like crazy. But he doesn't. And this is where Nebraska comes
really?
In. He goes smaller, all introspective. Everybody freaked out. His managers, producer guys, everything. And this is where the movie comes in. So now it's 1982. He's totally famous. And instead of going back to the studio, he decides he's going to make this dark, like I said earlier, it was stripped down acoustic record that he recorded in his own house in Colts Neck, New Jersey. Whatever the hell Colts Neck is. Let's go Colts Neck. No E Street Band. No amps. No mics. No mixing equipment. Just Bruce Springsteen in his room.
Solo Bruce.
And he called it Nebraska.
I mean, that's pretty bold of a move. Especially becoming famous. You just like total 180'd it.
You did. You totally 180'd it. This was my point.
Was
right?
The band mad?
This
like,
is great.
I feel like it's a diss to your band.
I don't know. I didn't really figure that. I don't think so.
I mean, they came back, obviously, to keep touring.
Right, so I'm going to say no, because they have 50 years worth of history together. But there might be a little riff there. I don't know.
So then is this the moment like where that was like the epic fail? Or was it the moment that people realized they loved Bruce as just Bruce?
I'm going to say neither one of those things.
Oh, really?
No, yeah. It was definitely a moment where he wanted to prove he was more than just like a rock star.
So he was like having an identity crisis.
Okay, so we're going to bring this all back around here pretty soon.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So hold tight.
So yes, he was having an identity crisis. It was an interesting play during this like iconic career trajectory. And they were like, okay, you're going to do this. And he's like, I'm doing it. And it was a little weird. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they're going so hard at this movie to say like, hey, this is a very unique choice that someone so famous would make in his career. But to him, he wanted to be the storyteller. He wanted to be the lyricist. He wanted to prove that he was a real artist, not just
sex appeal or whatever.
Right. Not just a front man at all.
So then did he go back to his band and was like, hey, man, sorry.
So actually the idea was his band was going to record it with him.
Okay.
Right. Afterwards. I think I have a fun fact on it later on. I won't give it all away. But like the idea was he was going to re-record it with his band. But then it like turned out where he just did it on his own. So I think they were like involved enough to know what was going on.
Adjacent. Okay.
Yeah. There you go. And then, yeah, like he goes back to being Bruce. 2 years later, 1984, he drops Born in the USA, Dancing in the Dark, sold over 30 million copies, stadiums, world tours, the whole enchilada. Totally off the hook. Now, you're not going to remember this, but I remember this because I grew up loving her. Do you remember Courtney Cox in Friends?
Yeah.
Okay. You know where she got famous?
No.
She was 20 years old. She was in MTV's music video. Bruce Springsteen is singing Dance with the Dark. Watch this music video.
Okay.
3 minutes long. He pulls her up on stage at the end. And Courtney Cox is the one he's dancing with up on stage. Beautiful blue eyes, super short dark hair. Every, I don't know, 12-year-old in the world was in love with Courtney Cox at that moment.
And
she just got up on stage and started dancing. It was the cutest thing ever. Oh, my God. We love Courtney.
Okay, so moving on from Courtney Cox and how much you were in love with her
because
you were
move
maybe
on.
12.
I don't want to move on. I want to vociferously talk about Courtney Cox.
Okay. Maybe you should do an episode about her.
Maybe we should.
Maybe. Okay, I'm going to sum up his history.
Go.
For little old
Oh,
Bruce.
This is what you do.
I do. Okay, so poor Jersey kid.
Yes.
Very modest upbringing.
Yes.
He had a moody, mean, mostly depressed dad.
Yes.
But a really supportive mom who bought him a guitar.
Yes.
Because he was inspired by Elvis.
Yes, he was.
Though Bruce was kind of like this little loner boy.
Catholic boy.
Yeah,
nonetheless.
I know. But he gets his guitar, ends up playing in all of these different bars in New Jersey, and then finally signs with Columbia Records.
Yep.
And after a few tries, he hits it big with Born to Run.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Badlands, Hungry Heart, like a lot of them. Not
like people were getting on board.
Come on.
They're on the Bruce board.
They were on the train.
Yes.
The Bruce Springs train.
Why did I say the Bruce board? I totally meant Bruce train.
Funny.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, okay.
But then he like 180s, detours to Nebraska,
Well, not technically to Nebraska, to Colts, Colts Neck, New Jersey, but yes, makes Nebraska, correct.
Which also I want to know why it was called Nebraska.
Yes, we'll talk about it.
Okay, yeah. And then after that, Born in the USA comes out.
Yes.
And it catapults him to legendary, iconic.
Rock star. Status of all time. You absolutely nailed it.
Okay, so now it's movie time.
Movie time.
Because it's about Nebraska, so I hope it comes movie in time. As to, again, why it's called Nebraska.
Yeah, okay.
So what do we know so far about the movie? But wait, before we do that.
What? I love this. Your ADD's kicking in.
It is. It absolutely is. It's so bad. Da, 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 da. Why was he such a phenomenon?
Phenomenon.
I get Born in the USA, this like anthem. It was great. Very Americana. Right place, right time. Was there something going on in the time of America that like rallied the troops and got everybody like hoorah?
All of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, you want me to give you the whole, like, how this whole came together? Like, why Bruce is such a badass?
We can all probably deduce, but in order to get cultured and curious, I should probably know what was happening at that time to know why he launched.
I love it.
Stardom.
No. Okay. I got it. You got to remember the times, just like you said. Those are the perfect setup. 70s were hard. Jimmy Carter. Remember Jimmy Carter?
Yes.
Our boy, he was in office.
Rip.
Total rip. He had sort of a weird presidency. Remember?
Yes.
Like, there was a lot of after-presidency stuff we loved, but there was, like, some presidency stuff we didn't love. It was crazy. Factories were shutting down everywhere. Unemployment was way up. Vietnam War sort of was over, but left the country super, super divided. It was a mess. You had the whole aftermath of Watergate going on, right? Mm-hmm. That was Nixon in the late 60s, right? Everybody's pissed off. And there was this whole vote of no confidence in the government.
So it's kind of like it is today.
Basically the same thing. Yes, right.
Perpetual.
Yeah. But so people, well, I mean, now we know the American dream's kind of like fake. But back then, this was off the 50s and the 60s, right? So this was the first time people started thinking the American dream was like not real.
So this is part of his storytelling. Though.
Yes.
Like he's bringing to life.
Yes, that's exactly that. That's what he started singing about. So think about it. He was the voice of the people that felt left behind. When he started singing about all these working guys and dead end jobs and people getting married too young and all these teenagers are dreaming about getting out of their hometowns, that was real life for like millions and millions of people at the time. Like he wasn't just writing music. He was writing the history like that we're talking about on the podcast. It's just in a way that people could dance to and like relate with a lot shorter. I mean, we take 45 minutes to talk about Bruce Springsteen. In 3 minutes, he was summing up someone's life. And it was, do you remember the Greek gods episode? We just did the Greek things, right?
Yeah.
Right. So it was same thing, but kind of like the same thing. They needed the gods to connect with. They needed flawed gods to feel connected. So this is the same thing, but in reverse. So Bruce was singing about everything everyone was going through and people felt connected to that. Like they were understood by him, and he was a voice for the voiceless. So kind of like, you also had to think about this. New Jersey at the time, super industrial, felt like the baby brother to New York. Like there was that whole thing going on, right? Like who's New Jersey? What's New Jersey? So like it was a whole right place, right time thing with him, because New Jersey was looking for the rock star, their folk hero, their somebody that could stand up for them. And he was that guy, totally.
But then what did he do in the 80s? Because you were giving the history of what was happening in the 70s, but then he got famous in the 80s.
Yeah,
so what was happening in the 80s?
But like both things, because he was already famous in the 70s. So it does depend on when you were born and when you grew up, right? I remember more of the 70s, you remember more of the 80s. That's when Born in the USA went crazy. So all these other bands are like doing coke and playing with their synthesizers and everything. But Bruce, remember, he was just playing that guitar. He had the blue jeans. He had the white t-shirt, rocking out, telling a story about America. Like, America's not awesome, doesn't have all shit together all the time. So go back to, like, Nebraska and why that was so pioneering in 1982. It wasn't just an album. He was literally holding the mirror up to everybody, saying, look at America right now. It's not that pretty. Actually, you know what he was doing? He was being very vociferous about America.
Good job getting in there twice.
Right. So sort of the same concept in the 80s where he was bucking the trend of music, and that was still relating to a bunch of working class people. Absolutely it was.
And so because people could relate to it, he now is this huge icon.
Yes.
And now that he's 76
years old. Yes. Decades and decades later.
Now there's this movie.
Yes, there is.
To encapsulate this little part of his life.
Yes.
That the movie then thinks was a very pivotal moment.
Yes.
I'd assume.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Because it's sort of like, I think they picked the, I don't think they wanted to just do another biopic, right?
Well, that's right. Earlier when you said biopic, I was like, well, it's not really about his life.
Exactly. So I think they were looking for where art and America collided. I think they were looking for a story here.
Okay.
And we'll see. I mean, the jury's out. I don't know if this is an excellent movie or not. I can't tell you one way or the other. I think it's a good idea on what they're trying to accomplish. Got it?
Got it.
Okay. So the movie's called Deliver Me From Nowhere, and it's literally about Bruce in his house in 1982, sitting in his bedroom, with a little four-track cassette recorder. Like, literally, Amanda, a Sears tape deck, which you have no idea what that is, but I grew up with those. With just his guitar, song lyrics, trying to record this new album all by himself.
Okay, I do know what a tape deck is.
Okay, fine.
But speaking of things just sitting there and not having anything done to them, like, how is this movie at all interesting? Because 2 hours on him creating Nebraska seems kind of like a snore fest.
Right, especially for you who know nothing about him and don't care about
music. I need the drama. I need.
But if this was what? Tic Tac Toe, the guy who made Rent?
Tick,
what?
Tick, boom.
Tick, tick, boom. Then you would watch it. So, first of all,
there's drama.
I don't know if this is going to be interesting. The jury's out. I don't know. But I will say this. They are playing this up as like a huge drama. This is not.
Oh, really?
This is not like some feel-good movie. This is about him struggling with becoming famous and having the world at his feet. And then they said, we're going to talk a little bit later about his dad and depression and him battling his own depression and this pressure of trying to personify the guy he didn't want to be, the boss, the front man. Like, he didn't want to do all that. You remember, he was a loner. This whole, like,
well,
introvert.
Like, it's
so all of this was weighing so heavily on him. So I love the idea. Again, don't know if they're going to pull this off in the movie, but I love the idea of what they're trying to accomplish here. It is a get inside his head at his most vulnerable part of his career, and they're putting it on film to see what's going to go on. So far, the critics, everything I'm reading online is saying movie's pretty slow, super introspective. I have a quote here, more of a meditation on fame and art than the traditional music biopic. More contemplative, you would say. Contemplative.
Okay.
Could that be your word of the day?
Yeah.
Reflective.
That's
contemplative.
Good, yeah.
Right. So maybe good?
Okay.
Question
well,
mark?
Maybe who plays Bruce? Because that might make it good.
Heartthrob. Okay.
Heartthrob.
Jeremy Allen White. Do you watch The Bear?
I don't know why I say heartthrob.
I don't. I think he's like, my family thinks he's disgusting. Guy with a huge honker.
Yeah.
Like, makes no sense. Right. But everybody, oh my God, Jeremy Allen White.
Really?
No, I think he's ugly AF. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean,
Thank you for agreeing with me.
Not that he's ugly.
Oh, he's ugly.
Oh gosh.
Uh-huh. Okay, whatever. I think it's good casting, first of all. We'll see.
Such a good casting?
Huh?
Why such a good casting?
Because I like think about it. He's got that curly hair. He's going to look like him. I mean, it's gonna look good. And he himself plays character. Like, do you remember Shameless? Did you watch Shameless? You watch The Bear?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's all tied up in knots in himself anyway.
Yes,
like, that's
yes.
That's the best character he plays. So this is, I think they picked somebody good to be able to do it, right? But the rest of the cast is also awesome, too. Do you know Jeremy Strong from Succession?
Yes.
Like, super fame, uh-huh. Right? Okay. He plays, I don't know, I think his manager or something. And then Mark Maron plays his producer, the famous comedian who I love. Have you seen Stick? It's on Apple TV with Owen Wilson.
Oh,
okay. No.
Golf one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Mark is his caddy.
Yes.
Like,
okay.
Right. So like a lot of famous people in this. Like this thing's pretty good.
So is it going to be Oscar worthy, potentially?
I don't know. Like so I think it could go
just
one.
Because like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, let me
right,
say this.
Was like, woof.
Yeah, but I, that was different because that was like, come on, that was like the feel good movie. That was the whole concept. So this, I think, could either absolutely fizzle out and just nobody likes it. The critics like it, but the audience, popcorn meter, hates it. No. I'm saying it could go this way. It could be that bad. Or there's not going to be in between. It's either going to suck or I think Jeremy Allen White's going to be up for an Oscar, right? They're going to be like, oh my God, this was an amazing performance. Like, everybody got in his head. Like, this is such a big thing. Da 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 da. And they love bio. Like the Academy loves
bio. I feel like a lot of the people who have portrayed someone,
yes.
Right? Like
when?
Austin something with Elvis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Rami
Malek. He won Best Actor Queen, but he
didn't
Rhapsody.
And then whoever did like Bob Dylan.
Yeah. Oh, Bob Dylan. I don't know that. They didn't win anything. They
but
were nominated,
nominated
for a shit ton. Yeah.
And I guess my point is I feel like.
Oh my God, who was that? Was that Timothy Chalamet that did Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so him, like again.
Yeah,
right?
So see, they all were up for it. So I think. Look, I wish I would have already watched the movie. We should do this show. But I don't know. Should we wait to do these episodes, like these podcast episodes, until the movies come out?
No, because I
think,
the
it's better like to build
also
up.
Skew, like you're learning
our
about the
yeah,
person.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, do you read the book first or do you watch the movie?
I always read the book first.
Right. And so I think it's good to do it first before watching the movie.
Yeah.
Because I think it'll.
I will say this: when it premiered in Telluride in August, right, the film festival, critics were risen it already. They were saying like, this is hot. So if that
what does rizzing it mean?
Like rizzing it up, like it's badass. Like,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah. Like you're flexing. Now we learn. You don't know rizzing.
I don't.
So here's what's so funny about all these kid words, like Gen. What is it? Gen Z words. I know them all because my kids like live through Gen Z. Right now, I'm gonna age out. I'm gone. Right, literally in the next 2 years. Right, Ruth, 18, 19, 20 years old, done and done. you're going to bring me the new words for Gen Alpha.
Well, that's true.
And you're going to be saying shit. I'm going to be, what are we talking about now? Okay, oh, sorry. No. Anyway. All right. Can we get back on track here?
Okay,
focus.
So the title is Deliver Me From Nowhere.
Yes.
What does that even mean? And number two,
what?
You said you were going to explain Nebraska, and I have yet to hear what Nebraska was even about. It was written in New Jersey.
That's a good point. They should have called it New Jersey. No, Bon Jovi took New Jersey. Okay, here's the deal.
Bon Jovi's from New Jersey?
Wait a break. Bon Jovi's from New Jersey and made an album called New Jersey. Should we do one on Bon Jovi next?
Wow, why are so many people from New Jersey?
I don't know, because they're just cool like that.
Wow. All right.
So here we go. Deliver Me From Nowhere comes from a book.
A book?
The same title. Yes.
What book?
By Warren Zane. Because the movie is actually based on the book about the making of Nebraska. Just like everything else, it's a screenplay adapted for.
Okay, so Warren Zane wrote a book.
The book.
About
Deliver Me From Nowhere.
Making Nebraska.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And then they decided to make a movie about it because that's how we do everything in America. Yes. When I Googled it, it said the title comes from the idea that Nebraska, the whole album Nebraska, which is the second question you asked me, feels like a bunch of characters stuck in nowhere towns begging for an escape. So the idea is that Nebraska, the actual state of Nebraska, is a metaphor for a flat, lonely, empty, sort of full of ghosts, nowhere land. Sorry,
wow.
Nebraska. Who the
shit on Nebraska,
fuck lives
man.
In Nebraska? But that's why he picked the name of the album Nebraska, and that's why Warren Zane picked the title Deliver Me From Nowhere. Get me out of nowhere. Let me go anywhere else.
Right, but didn't he feel like he was trapped in Freehold? And he escaped, and so now he's projecting all of these emotions on Nebraska?
Poor Nebraska. What do you want me to say? He's trying to connect with the working man. So he just didn't want to use his hometown.
I guess that would make the huge assumption that Nebraska's all depressed, too.
Right. Nebraska is sort of kind of lonely and flat and empty, let's be honest. It's a flyover state.
I had fun in Chadron, Nebraska.
Wow. You know about what? Chadron, Nebraska, and
maybe
you don't know
Chadron. I don't
who
know.
Bruce Springsteen is? You're terrible.
Listen, we drove through to Agate Fossil Bed in Nebraska. Very important place to go.
Apparently. Yes. Okay. Whatever. Let me just finish here, okay, with your detour into like wherever we just went in Nebraska. I think the whole point of why the movie matters is it's not supposed to be at all about how Bruce got famous. It's the idea of what the fame cost him. And what hides underneath the surface and lurks in all those dark places, and then how he used music to process it all. Very metaphysical. Like, we're going to probably have to smoke dope before we go, or like have a gummy before we go to the movie. Okay?
How about you do that? I'll go in with a very sober mind, and
Fine.
We can tell about our different experiences and interpretations of said movie.
All I know is I'll be standing up singing the whole time, so there's that.
Okay.
All right.
Sum it up. The Deliver Me From Nowhere movie.
Yes.
Is a biopic of a certain point of his life about Nebraska, which is a book. It stars Jeremy Allen White as Bruce Springsteen.
Big honker guy. Yep.
He was already famous then at this point in time. Mm-hmm. But it's stripping everything down to how he created when he created Nebraska, which is like the boldest and weirdest move in all of rock history.
That's basically
and
it.
And why it's important. That's all.
That's
why.
Basically it. We're doing that. Can't wait to see it.
Fair. So before we get any more like existential here, can we lighten up just a little bit?
Are we not? We're too existential.
Well,
for you
but now it's like so depressing.
It is a little.
And
bit,
I mean,
that was the whole
and
point.
And I'm sure it's like a very low moment in his life.
Yeah. Do you battle depression?
I don't.
Okay. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I don't know that I battled officially depression because I wasn't like diagnosed or anything. But like, dude.
I know it gets dark.
I went through some shit. So if he was like going through a lot of that for a long period of time in his career. No wonder that shit's dark.
I wonder if he's ever like talked about that though.
He does.
Yes. Okay.
Yes,
good.
He has opened up about it. Yeah. For sure.
I do love that because I feel like when people open up about it, it gives other people who are going through something not
help.
The same but similarly.
I agree.
Of like I'm not crazy and you know.
Well,
okay. Again, but before we get too dark.
Yeah.
Fun facts?
Yes, fun facts. All right, you ready?
Yes.
Number one, Bruce Springsteen never had a number one single. Okay, now I know we said earlier he had a number one album, but not a single.
You did make that very clear.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a little bit of difference here, right? A number one album is when the whole record is the most popular in the country for that week, right?
Like all the songs total.
Yes, and that happened with The River. That was super massive. So it was Born in the USA. He had two number one albums, but a number one hit means one specific song tops the Billboard like Hot 100 in a specific week.
I'm shocked Born in the USA wasn't number one.
No, not only. Yeah, and it wasn't even number two. The closest he ever got was Dancing in the Dark.
Oh.
The Courtney Cox one.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He got all the way up to number two, but didn't make it to number one. All right, speaking of number two, I have to go number two. But also, number two, fun fact, he once played a concert for over 4 hours. 4 hours!
That's crazy.
Check this, in 2012 in Helsinki, Finland, he played for 4 hours and 6 minutes straight. Longest show he ever played live. And earlier that same year, his longest up to that point was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he played for 3 hours and 48 minutes. So he broke his own record. He must have been like doing Viagra or something like in 2012. But what's going on there? That's crazy. How long he could last? Like, that's insane. He was old by that time. But now his shows are about 2.5, 3 hours long. Still, Amanda, 76
that's a
years
long
old.
Time.
Yes, that's freaking insane. That's why I'm saying we got to go. We got to see one. I had a buddy. You remember I shouted out Debbie Toomey? She was the one who took me on that horrific half marathon. So her husband, Pete Toomey, I was just having dinner with him. I was telling him we're going to do an episode on Bruce. And he went to see him. And he said it was probably one of the best concerts he's ever gone to in his entire life. He said it was incredible.
Okay, well, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. We should go just so I can actually have like a male artist that I find incredible.
Let's go.
Because I do feel like in this industry, all of the female artists' shows are much more like theatrical, overproduced, dancing, so much going on.
Right.
So
yeah,
I want to see it just so I can say, there is a male artist that actually does something.
Well, he ain't no Justin Timberlake, you know what I mean?
But he's playing.
He ain't no Bruno Mars, you know? But I hear you. Okay.
Fair. Those two are iconic, too. I take back my statement. There's two.
No, you're still going to go with me. Okay, number three. This one's a good one. Did you know that before 2009, Bruce Springsteen actually turned down the Super Bowl halftime show, like Amanda, on the regular, 10 times to be exact. He turned
it down.
That's a lot. So they started approaching him in the early 1990s, but he always said the performance would be too short for him, so he didn't want to do it because it wasn't like he wasn't being true to his music.
Yeah.
Right. But he finally agreed in 2009 when he was 60 years old, realizing how important it was to reach the next generation of music lovers. So he like dumbed the whole thing down, made it 12 or 15 minutes long so people would understand his life and legacy and what he brought to music.
Love it.
Dude, it's bazonkers, right? Super Bowl halftime shows are insane. People love that shit. Okay. Number four, the album The River, the one that basically got him famous, was actually inspired by his sister Virginia. So she got pregnant when she was young and married her boyfriend Mickey in a shotgun wedding. And Bruce wrote the song about her story. He still introduces the song at his concerts by telling the audience, quote, "I write songs about people who are real to me and people that I know. My sister got married when she was real young. And she and her husband had to struggle like a lot of people I know. This one's for them." What a guy.
That's awesome.
Dude.
But sad now.
Why is that sad? Well, they're still married. They stayed together.
But the song is sad.
It is a sad song. But they stayed together. Okay. And they're married and it's excellent.
Okay.
And he still talks about his sister. I think it's cool.
Fair.
Okay. And finally, we know that he recorded Nebraska in his bedroom on the 4-track cassette recorder like the Sears thing we were talking about earlier. And I know I said like the plan was to re-record all the songs with the E Street Band. Remember I said that?
Yes.
Okay.
And
this
release later.
Right. This is my last fun fact. But Bruce decided the raw sort of more like haunting demo that he made was like, that was it. It was perfect.
Okay.
The problem was the sound quality was so bad the engineers weren't sure if a cassette tape could be mastered into a vinyl record. They ended up using some new experimental technology at the time to make the whole thing work. Which is crazy. So he like didn't even know that they'd be able to pull this thing off. And thank God it did, because from there, it influenced an entire generation. Both U2 and The Killers. You know U2.
Yeah.
You know The Killers.
Yes.
Okay, all right. They've cited Nebraska, specifically Nebraska, as an influence on their music and songwriting, saying it, quote, captures the darkness of the American soul.
All right.
There you go. That's all I got. Fun facts out. Let's go Nebraska.
But do you also love how like Elvis was like this domino effect. He inspired
started
Bruce,
it
and then he and they
think about it.
Turn Bruce inspired U2 and The Killers.
Okay. So now we got to go back. It's not like Elvis was first. So you got to go up before Elvis. You got to go up. Remember jazz?
Well,
we did
true.
Our episode on jazz.
Yeah,
we went
yeah.
even further back, right? So then that's why we did Beats Without Borders,
yeah,
right? The
yeah,
whole
yeah,
rhythm,
yeah.
like
music. It's all linked.
This is why I
transcends
have
generations.
An orgasm every time I listen to songs. This is my problem. Okay. What do you want me to say?
All right then. On that note.
I'm sorry, I was so vociferous. Okay.
I do feel like we just got like a little Springsteen cheat sheet and a little history with a little bit of drama.
Yeah.
And of course you had to throw in your Viagra joke or sex jokes in there.
I do.
You know, here and
thank
there.
Thank you for allowing that.
Rock and roll, I guess it's expected. Here we are.
Yes. All right, I could do a little bit of rock and roll.
Okay, we're gonna bring it home now.
Give us
our takeaways.
Bring it home. Here
like
we go.
Like a call to action, what we got to do.
Let's
obviously
go.
See the movie.
Right. Go to a concert.
What else?
All that kind of stuff.
Concert. Yeah.
Right. So if anybody
one.
Wants to go deeper into Bruce Springsteen's life, I suggest you do because we went over this in like 30 minutes. Read his autobiography, Born to Run. It's big and a little messy, I'm not going to lie, because it's all over the place. But it is Bruce telling his own story. And you can literally hear his song lyrics behind like each of his sentences. I read it. It's amazing. Totally worth a read. Published in 2016. Critics loved it because they said it was unusual for a rock star to spend so much time talking about his vulnerability, mental health, rather than just sort of the fun, wild sort of sex, drugs, rock and roll vibe that you so nicely said I was allowed to talk about on this. And if you don't read, because who are we kidding? Nobody really reads anymore except me because I'm old. Just watch the 2019 Netflix documentary Springsteen on Broadway.
Oh.
How's that? What? Right? It's basically Bruce alone on stage telling his whole life story through songs, jokes, and confessions.
What?
Yes.
Way oh, our more, worlds are colliding. Why didn't you lead with that?
More digestible than a 500-page book. What? Oh, what do you mean? I got to save some of this juice. You know, to keep you
interested.
Keep you interested. Absolutely. Okay. If you don't want to do either one of those, remember these details to seem sort of sophisticated. All right. Number one, Bruce Frederick Joseph Springsteen was born in 1949 in Freehold, New Jersey, not Nebraska, a working class Catholic kid, son of a dark, brooding dad and a supportive, optimistic mom. Go, Bruce. Number two, his breakthrough came in 1975 with Born to Run and has literally spent the last five decades as America's ultimate rock and roll storyteller. He was known as the working class poet and built his entire career on telling stories of ordinary people. Number three, he's never had a number one single, but his albums Born in the USA, The River, and Darkness on the Edge of Town are all cultural landmarks. And at the height of his fame, he chose Risk Over Comfort and released Nebraska, a stripped-down, lo-fi, haunting album that cemented him as an artist, not just the hit maker. Number four, he never loved the nickname The Boss. It came from him handling cash for the band, but it stuck. Ironically, the guy who hated authority became the figurehead of rock authority. Number five, unlike many rock stars, he's been open about his lifelong fight with depression and identity. He's shown that vulnerability can coexist with legendary strength on stage. Truly an icon. And finally, at 76 years old, he's still playing three-hour shows. No gimmicks, no nostalgia act, just raw energy and connection. Few artists have kept their credibility and stamina across six decades the way Springsteen has. Total legend.
And there you have it, fellow listeners. A deep dive into the raw and restless world of Bruce Springsteen. From a quiet Catholic kid in Freehold to the boss on the world stage, he wasn't just writing songs. He was capturing the spirit of Americana in three chords and the truth. So if we've done our job today, hopefully you're walking away a bit more sophisticated with a sharper Springsteen IQ and maybe a better sense of why he still matters after all these decades. Whether you blast Born to Run on road trips, cry in your room over Nebraska, or just remember that Courtney Cox got pulled up on stage in Dancing in the Dark, Bruce reminds us that music isn't just entertainment. It's storytelling at its best, and the voice of the working class.
Let's go.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe, leave us a review, and pass it along to someone who still thinks Springsteen is just dad rock barbecue music.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, God.
And connect with them. There
Please
you go.
Please do.
Here's hoping we converted you to be a brand new Bruce believer. Until next time, stay curious and stay boss.
Brand new Bruce believer. Say that five times fast.